It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Terror suspect Ahmad Khan Rahami wounded and in custody after a shootout with police in Linden, New Jersey. Roughly 3 hours after his picture was released by the FBI with a warning, Rahami should be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Several officers were hurt in the exchange of fire.
At around 10:45 this morning, two Linden police officers confronted Rahami in Linden on East Elizabeth Street. They encountered him outside a local bar and there was an exchange of gunfire, and he was then taken to custody.
Authorities believe Rahami planted a series of explosive devices in New York and New Jersey, the first detonating Saturday morning, a pipe bomb and a trash can in Seaside Park, New Jersey, along the route of a military charity 5K run. Then Saturday night on 23rd Street in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan, a pressure cooker bomb blew up in or next to a dumpster, rocking the block, shattering windows, and injuring 29 people, some by shrapnel, including BBs and ball bearings. Later Saturday night, another pressure cooker bomb was found on 27th Street, just four blocks away, but it did not go off. And authorities told Fox News all three devices were connected to flip phones and likely built by the same man.
I have no indication that there is a cell operating in the area or in the city. The investigation is ongoing, so as we develop more information, we continue to go, but I have no indication that there is a cell operating here.
Then Sunday night, a backpack with several more pipe bombs was found at a train station in Elizabeth, New Jersey, just a half mile from Rahami's home. A police bomb squad robot detonated one of the devices. Monday morning, authorities released Rahami's picture, calling him a person of interest, concerned about the potential of another attack.
We activated earlier today a messaging system used by our Office of Emergency Management that allowed us to get information out to all New Yorkers across the board, and it had an extraordinary effect.
This is another example of what law enforcement does every day. They put themselves in harm's way to protect others, regardless of the risks. And this all started on Saturday.
Sandy Rios with you. That was Rick Leventhal and his report on Fox last night on Special Report. I guess a couple of things have to be said for sure. That the New York police, in spite of their leadership, did an amazing job of apprehending Ahmad Rahami in such a short time. It's just amazing. And then we're hearing stories about New Yorkers taking gifts to the police, bringing food to them. Which is another part of this story that needs to be told. Maybe American people are beginning to realize, many of us already knew that, but maybe some are rediscovering the importance of our police and how they must be respected and honored because they are the only ones standing between us and terrorists like Ahmad Rahami. You know, when you think about the amount of death and destruction that could have taken place on these five different devices that he planted, think about that. He basically failed in his mission. But if he hadn't failed in his mission, there could be police dead. When he was apprehended, he shot a policeman who it was reported that he was in the doorway of some business sleeping. The policeman apprehended him and he shot the policeman. But the policeman had a bulletproof vest on. Otherwise, he would be dead. And then two other officers were shot because Ahmad just kept running through the streets and he was shooting primarily police. I think, you know, we just have to remember this could have been horrible. But by the grace of God, it was people's lives were spared. And there are 27 injured in New York in that one bombing, the one bomb that did go off. But that's the reality of things. This Ahmad Rahami, one of the things we're learning about him, of course, you know, you get into the personality profiles of each of these persons. You know, whether you like it or not, we saw a picture of him. He visited his homeland, Afghanistan, and it sounds like he radicalized. And then reports are that in the family business, which is what First American Chicken, that's the name of it, family members have started dressing in, in the hijab and in traditional Muslim dress. Of course, they're completely innocent. It's just Ahmad. You know, it's just they just happen to be suddenly, you know, dressing in the, you know, they are suddenly taking their faith very seriously, changing their dress in America, and suddenly their son is perpetrating violence on Americans. And we learn now that he had a girlfriend in high school. He had a baby with Maria is her name. He expressed to her his hatred for America, his hatred for gays, which is Islamic doctrine. And so it goes. And so that's Ahmad Rahami. And, of course, I'm sure the reason that they didn't shoot to kill him was that they want to know who else is he connected to. You know, the pressure cooker bomb that he created is the one that was on the Al-Qaeda, what is it called, Inspire magazine, I think it's called, where they laid out how to make a bomb with a pressure cooker. It's what the Boston bombers used, and that's what he used. So, but, of course, there's no reason to believe there's any connection with terrorism. That's what they keep telling us, and that's actually we're going to talk about to Andy McCarthy when he joins us shortly. But then, of course, there was a terror attack in Minnesota as well, and we're learning more about that perpetrator. He is a Somali, but he came from Kenya. It's Dahir Aden. They said, well, we don't know. He was on his way to buy an iPhone. He's just a kid. He's good in sports. The family, you know, knows nothing. Shocked. Had no idea. In fact, they made a statement. Leaders of the Somali community up in Minnesota said, basically, this doesn't represent any religion. No connection. Doesn't represent any religion or any group. We strongly condemn what happened last night. Because there's just no connection, of course, to his stabbing of 9 people in that mall and Islam. So here's a report that gives a little more information. Mike Tobin, a great reporter for Fox, reports from Minnesota. Let's listen.
An ISIS-related media outlet says the attacker at a mall in St. Cloud, Minnesota, was a soldier for the Islamic State, acting on a call for lone wolf attacks. Officials say the knife men mentioned Allah, and before stabbing one victim, asked if he was Muslim. Beyond that, investigators do not have evidence that links this attack to organized terrorism.
We do not at this point in time know whether the subject was in contact with, had connections with, was inspired by a foreign terrorist organization.
The family of 22-year-old Dahir Aden identified him as the attacker who was shot and killed Saturday night. A source says he is Somali, but born in Kenya as a refugee. However, he excelled once in America, honors in high school, and he attended a local college. Now, the entire Somali community that fled civil war and famine and arrived in Minnesota is fearful that they will be stigmatized by the actions of one man.
All right, that's what they all say. And this is it, you know. It's because the Somali spokesman people go into how poorly treated they are and how people call them terrorists and how mistreated, and that's the party line there. And of course, that's what the killer, would-be killer, the guy charged with attempted murder, police in New York is talking about, Ahmad Rahami. His family's talking about how mistreated they were, their restaurant, how the police tried to shut them down. And then we find out that they were operating into the wee hours of the morning, till 3 or 4 in the morning, and it was a gathering place for young men, maybe Muslim, I don't know, but they were urinating and doing whatever you do on other people's lawns in the neighborhood, and that was the reason that there was a violation. But that's not the way they tell it. It's mistreatment of them, and that is the theme. All right, there was another personality in all of this, certainly in Minnesota, and it was a guy named Jason Falconer. He is the former chief of police for a nearby town to St. Cloud, but let me read this. This is from PJ Media. Falconer is the owner of Tactical Advantage, a shooting range and tactical training facility. He is the former chief of police of Albany, Minnesota. But he is an NRA instructor and a member of the United States Practical Shooting Association, which is the Competitive Pistol Shooting Association. And Liz Schell, the writer of this, writes, the media will not tell you those things. Bob Owens at Bearing Arms writes, but Falconer has consistently been identified in the mainstream media only as a former police chief and off-duty police officer. You can always count on the media to hush up any stories that follow the good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun narrative, especially when the good guys train other good guys. So that's Jason Falconer, who took down the shooter in Minnesota. And of course, the candidates weighed in on this, and we'll listen to what both of them had to say, at least in part. Here's Trump and then Clinton.
Let's ask Hillary Clinton, how many people who subscribe to radical Islamic views and support the oppression of non-believers would you call deplorable or irredeemable? Or are those words reserved only for hardworking Americans that truly love our country and they want to make a statement?
A lot of the rhetoric we've heard from Donald Trump has been seized on by terrorists, in particular ISIS, because they are looking to make this into a war against Islam rather than a war against jihadists, violent terrorists.
All right. It's not, you know, so you hear it. We're going to, again, flesh this out with Andy McCarthy in just a second, but I'm giving you an overview. We know this is a shocking story, honestly. The president weighed in on this, but he didn't mention terror. And Kevin Cork actually reports on that. Let's listen.
It seemed an almost instinctive response.
At this point, we see no connection between that incident and what happened here.
President Obama quick to suggest that there was no apparent connection between the explosions in New York and New Jersey and the stabbings in Minnesota. While the investigation into any possible ties continues, the fact is all were acts of terror, and all were perpetrated by self-proclaimed Muslims. In his first remarks since the weekend's attacks, the president cautioned against drawing conclusions based on what he called limited information.
It does not help if false reports or incomplete information is out there. So try to, as much as possible, stick to what our investigators say, because they actually know what they're talking about.
However, what is clear is the White House's penchant to suggest that attacks involving self-described Muslim suspects are lone wolf in nature, not part of a broader problem. From the president's description of the underwear bomber,
an isolated extremist,
to the San Bernardino killers,
lone wolf actors,
to the Orlando massacre,
lone wolf attacks,
and Chattanooga shootings.
And this threat of lone wolves and small cells.
Experts believe the White House's unwillingness to tell the hard truth endangers Americans.
The president has never been willing to admit that we are facing a global ideological threat from radical Islam. And we saw this today when he wouldn't call the attacks in New Jersey and New York terrorism. I think that's why this threat has been growing throughout Mr. Obama's presidency.
And what ISIL wants to do is they want to project that they are an organization that is representing Islam in a fight and a war against the West and a war against the United States. That is a bankrupt, false narrative.
A narrative that nonetheless continues to resonate with terrorists who've shown no hesitance in injuring innocent Americans. Said the Trump campaign's Jason Miller, quote, when the White House says we are in a narrative fight against ISIS just days after a series of apparent terror attacks on U.S. soil, we should all be very concerned. Miller also added in that statement that it's time for new leadership in the fight against radical Islamic terrorism, a description we've yet to hear from this White House. We also learned tonight, Brett, from New York officials that they have yet to be able to draw a direct connection between Rouhani and any terror cells in the New York area.
All right, so that was Kevin Cork. I thought that was an excellent report. And then on the heels of that, another story, which is related in other ways. And that is that the Department of Homeland Security has just granted 800 illegal immigrants from countries of concern. What countries might those be? Somali, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. You fill in the blanks. Countries of concern, set for deportation, mistakenly granted citizenship. Oh, gosh, just happened. It's totally by mistake. And they didn't have fingerprints on file, and so they just let it through. So now some of them are in law enforcement, some are working as security guards, some are in airports. This is amazing, and if I had time to read the rest of the story, there are even more under consideration. Let me just say that the Congress is getting ready to pass what they call a short-term spending bill, a CR. And under the leadership of Paul Ryan, they intend to fully fund all of this immigration, all of the Muslim immigration, all of the so-called Syrian refugees, and people don't want to fight it in Congress except for a few. We're going to be focusing on that. Jim Bridenstine, Dave Brett, Marsha Blackburn, they'll be my guests in the next few days, and we're going to talk about how we can stop this insanity. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your healthcare with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at AFR.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. This is a story of two high school football coaches from Washington State. Both took a knee at a football game. Coach Joe Kennedy of Bremerton High School took a knee to pray to God. He was fired. Coach Joey Thomas of Garfield High School took a knee to protest America. He was praised. To be fair, both men coach in different school districts, so the rules on prayer and protest may vary. But it does demonstrate how public schools embrace anti-American sentiment while rejecting freedom of religion. Coach Thomas made national headlines over the weekend after he joined the entire high school football team in a protest during the national anthem. And I feel sorry for the Garfield High School football team. Coaches are supposed to help shape teenage boys into young men, to teach them about duty and honor. Instead, the youngsters at Garfield are being coached by a community organizer. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning to you. Ahmed Rahami behind me here at the hospital held $5.2 million bond on counts of attempted murder of a law enforcement officer. That is from the shootout that wounded both two police officers, and he was wounded as well. He did feel well enough yesterday, though, to have his mugshot taken. He's being held at the hospital under armed guard. Still trying to learn more about his various trips to Afghanistan and Pakistan, who he met with. Was he inspired by the Taliban there? Was he perhaps trained by the Taliban there? Also from his former high school sweetheart, learning that he was a deadbeat father who really did not like America, didn't like gays either. Learning more about his family and their views towards America. Check out his brother's Facebook post. Here's a picture from his Facebook page with the quote, "I bring the men who desire death as ardently as you desire life," from Khalid bin Walid. Still, despite all of these different dots, if you will, the FBI said they'd never connected them.
There's nothing to indicate that currently he was on our radar. We had a report of a domestic incident some time ago. That was the allegations were recanted, and I don't have any other information. We'll keep digging.
And lots of focus still on this place, First American Fried Chicken. Make of that name what you will. It's owned by Rahami's father, and he evidently worked there, lived above there. The FBI raided that location yesterday along with the ATF and a number of bomb dogs. Still, so many unanswered questions. Even though the FBI says they're not actively looking for anyone else, Heather, big questions here. Did he have any help planting these devices? Did he have any help making these devices? What inspired him online? Was he communicating with any foreign terrorist groups about these bombs that he planted up and down the eastern seaboard?
All right, that was Leland Vitter very early this morning on Fox Defense Friends First. And that was the update. We learned a little bit something new about Ahmad Rahami. Certainly his brother's Facebook post that we're bringing in men who love death more than they love life. Boy, that sounds familiar. I believe that's a Muslim Brotherhood slogan. And my next guest would certainly know that. Andy McCarthy, of course, is the author of so many books on the principles of Islam, has done a great service to this country, teaching us what he learned when he prosecuted the blind sheikh in the first World Trade Center bombing. The author of Willful Blindness, he writes for National Review and PJ Media and others, former U.S. attorney, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Andy.
Sandy, great to be with you, as always.
It's always good to hear your voice, Andy, and I'm losing mine in just a minute. Hey, is that a Muslim Brotherhood phrase? Because, you know, we hear that so often, we love death more than they love life. Is that particularly Muslim Brotherhood language, or is it in the Quran?
It goes back to Islamic scripture, and the Muslim Brotherhood is certainly appropriated, but it was famously spoken of by bin Laden, famously spoken of by the blind sheikh, famously spoken of by many Sharia supremacists, Sunni in particular. I don't like calling them clerics. I think jurist is a better term. And there's obviously a Shiite revolutionary jihadist analog to it as well.
But in our day, in these current times, these last few 20 years that we've been fighting terrorism in ways that Americans kind of understand, that is a phrase, you know, we've heard people inside the Beltway use that phrase, Andy. Damning. We love death more than they love.
Yeah. Yes, you're quite right.
Yeah. All right. So you have written today or yesterday, I think, one of the best explanations of something you have been saying for years. I've been trying to say it. I've been trying to echo your words and Frank Gaffney's and others who I've learned from. You say the response to this weekend's terror attacks show willful blindness in real time. I thought the article really, honestly, Andy's one of your best. Let's talk about it, because before you joined us, I've been playing all these clips, and the theme is nothing to see here. Not international terrorism. It's a lone wolf. It's, they were mistreated. The community and Somali community in Minnesota, they were mistreated. And now we know that, you know, Ahmad and Rahami, his family was mistreated badly in New Jersey in their chicken shop. So these are the themes that we're hearing. And I'm teach us, you know, tell people what's really happening here, Andy.
Well, I think the bottom line policy-wise is that if you don't want to deal with what actually causes this strain of terrorism that we've been dealing with for, you know, over 30 years now, really, what you end up with is finding alternative causes for terrorism. And what I've found over the years, Sandy, is that there are some people who I think foolishly, but at least in good faith, believe that we can't acknowledge that the threat stems from a regrettably mainstream interpretation of Islam, which is fundamentalist and literalist. A lot of those people may understand that to be a fact, that they think that we have to tell this convenient lie that terrorism has nothing to do with Islam, because if we don't, then we'll be perceived as being at war with all Muslims and all of Islam. Now, I happen to think that's moronic. It's well known that, for example, the first terrorists that I, or the first Muslims who I met in my terrorism investigations in the 1990s were not terrorists. They were patriotic Muslims who were helping us break the terrorists and crack the jihadist cell and stop mass murder attacks against Americans. So, it should be perfectly obvious not only that we have pro-Western, pro-American Muslims on our side, but that, in fact, Muslims are killed with more regularity than by jihadists than any other group. So, you know, it's probably around 80% of casualties. So, you know, there is that side to the story, and as it, I don't question the good faith of the people who make the argument that we, you know, we don't want to be perceived that way, but I do question their wisdom. Then I think there's the more common Washington thing, which is really cynical, and that is that we all know something has to cause terrorism, and if you erase the jihadist or the ideological component of it, then you fill in the blank with whatever the left happens to be against that week. So sometimes it's Guantanamo Bay, sometimes it's Bush and Cheney, sometimes it's Israel, sometimes it's Donald Trump, sometimes it's military commissions. But what we end up finding is that what allegedly causes terrorism is whatever policy the left just happens to oppose. And I think it's a very powerful and cynical rhetorical tool to try to libel and label your political adversaries as the causers of terrorism. And we've seen that to a fairly well over the weekend with, you know, particularly Mrs. Clinton, very, I think, preposterously claiming that it's Trump's rhetoric that causes terrorism. I don't know where Mrs. Clinton was. I know her husband was president when the World Trade Center got bombed, but I didn't notice Donald Trump around or having anything to do with it. You know, it should be pretty obvious to people that if they think about this in terms of common sense, what I said to my jury in the 1990s when the defense lawyer said that the terrorists in our case were motivated by either American policy or the enticements of a government informant, I looked at the jury in the eye and I said, all right, you people have common sense. What would it take to turn you into a terrorist? What could be said? What policy could be implemented? What enticement can be offered by a government informant that would drive you to commit mass murder? And, of course, when you think about it in those kind of stark common sense terms, people realize that this is just a silly argument. What drives people to commit mass murder attacks is ideological fervor. And there's no ideological fervor like religious oriented or religious derived fervor, because these people believe, and I think, you know, Sandy, you deal with this more than I do. I think that in our popular culture, we don't believe or we don't acknowledge anymore the power of religious belief. And since our elites poo-poo it, they can't wrap their brain around it when they see it. And what happens here is these people believe a literalist, fundamentalist, scripturally derived doctrine that holds that Allah has commanded them to make war against non-Muslims, is offended most profoundly by the fact that non-Muslims have been informed about the rules and regulations of Islam and have failed to adopt them, and that in so doing they occupy a kind of a degraded caste of human existence, such that mass murdering them, which we regard with horror, is something that they consider a duty. And I just think we're like ships passing in the night because we insist on projecting progressive Western values, as they call them, onto people who are from a belief system, a culture, and perhaps even a civilization that simply doesn't have the same value system that they have, abides by completely different principles, and frankly doesn't care what we think or what we say. Mrs. Clinton may find this astonishing. Maybe she's got short memory. I know she's got a lot of difficult memory issues, evidently. But when Bill Clinton was president, Al-Qaeda tried to kill him in the early 1990s. When George Bush was president, Al-Qaeda tried to kill him. Same thing with Barack Obama, who, you know, for all of his pandering to Islamists, is regarded as an apostate and an American puppet of Israel, et cetera, by the fundamentalists, who would kill him if they had the chance. And regardless of whether Clinton, Mrs. Clinton, or Donald Trump wins the next election, the jihadists will still regard America as the enemy of the United States and will be delighted to kill either one of them if given the chance. And what that ought to hammer home to people is that they ought to stop listening to this nonsensical rhetoric about which candidate Al-Qaeda would prefer to see win the election. They don't care that we have elections, let alone who wins them. They're offended by the fact that we are governed under a system that's not a caliphate under Sharia. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of this debate, frankly, that is so silly and so removed from reality. And, Sandy, I think what makes it most dangerous, I know I'm filibustering here, and I'll stop in a second, but what makes it most dangerous is it conveys to our enemies that we're utterly ignorant of what they think, of what their objectives are, of how they intend tactically to achieve them. And it's really, we may be the superpower, but it's a very uneven playing field when one side goes to school on the adversary like the Islamic supremacists do, and the other side sticks its head in the sand.
You know, Andy, you talk about in your, this another article, I think you, this is your most current, the mulish stupidity of the Clinton-Obama counterterrorism. You talk about that 35th anniversary edition of the New Criterion, Break the Cross, which I spent a great amount of time really at this mic talking about. And the thing that stunned me about it was the honesty. There was no games, no manipulation. They said why we hate you and why we fight you.
Right. And which, it's exactly what we're talking about. This is, I wrote an essay for the 35th anniversary of the New Criterion, which I'm very proud to appear in. But in it, I alluded to Dabiq magazine, which is a very splashy, well done, if you want to put the content to the side, magazine that's put out by ISIS from time to time. I mean, they really are slick, and they study us in terms of what's appealing to people in the way of media. But they have a very enlightening, I think, eye-opening, jaw-dropping article on around page 35 of the magazine that's called Why We Hate You and Why We Fight You. And they frankly say, we hate you because we are commanded by Allah to make war on you because you have not accepted Allah's law. And very interestingly, I think they go on to say, even if you stop fighting us, we might make a truce with you, at least temporarily, but we would never stop hating you. And we would ultimately fight you. And we would ultimately defeat you because we're commanded to do it. And it doesn't say anything about, you know, because you keep prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, or because Donald Trump is obnoxious. There's none of that. It's, you know, doctrinally, scripturally, we are commanded by Allah to kill you, to make war on you, until you agree to submit to the authority of the Islamic State, pay the jizya, which is a poll tax for the humiliating privilege of living as a non-Muslim under Muslim law, and agree to live under the authority of Islamic law, regardless of how antithetical it is to your political principles or your religious beliefs.
And let me restate what you just clarified. You wrote in the New Criterion, but we are talking about Dabiq magazine. It's ISIS magazine.
Correct.
We do have it on our Facebook page that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when it came out.
Yes, our friend Roger Kimball would be very grateful to
for that clarification.
Hey, he's
yes,
not publishing
sorry.
Dabiq,
yeah, right. Exactly.
The New Criterion is not publishing ISIS.
Andy, you know, you're a New Yorker, so I want to ask you a couple of practical questions. I want to know how you think New Yorkers, you know, who are notoriously liberal and leftists, now you've got all of this danger, really, on the streets. Five different bombs, as I understand it, in New York, New Jersey, and who knows what else is out there. Some message yesterday, more to come. How does this affect their view of this presidential race?
Well, you know, I don't think it affects it enough that it would flip New York into, say, the Trump category. But that's not to say it doesn't affect it at all. And, Sandy, let me remind your listeners of something that seems like ancient history now, but I think is very relevant to what you just asked me. And that is, do you remember back in 2009 when the brand spanking new Obama administration decided that they were going to not only close Gitmo, but they're going to move all of the terrorists stateside, and they're going to give them, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, a big old soapbox of a terrorism trial in the same Manhattan courthouse where I tried the blind shake.
Of course I do. Yes, of course.
Well, they weren't able to do that. And remember, they weren't able to do that because of political backlash at a time when Obama not only had great goodwill because he was really just starting out, but the Democrats had a hammerlock on both houses of Congress. And yet they couldn't do it because in New York City, Lower Manhattan, bluest of blue, people came out and demonstrated. I know because I was there, I spoke at the demonstration, in front of that courthouse saying, not here. You know, we need to keep these people at Guantanamo Bay where they're safe. They should be where we're safe from them. And they need to be given military commissions and executed, not brought to Manhattan to put America on trial. And Obama and Holder had to back down. Years later, they still haven't been able to carry off what they'd like to carry off, which is, again, to move Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to Manhattan and give him a trial in New York City. So terrorism, because the city is probably the number one, I shouldn't say probably, is the number one jihadist target in the world. It's a place they've tried to hit again and again and never stopped trying to hit. I think New Yorkers have a much less politically progressive outlook when it comes to things that may put their own lives in danger than they do on most social issues that are relevant to a presidential election.
And
you know, economic, political issues, et cetera.
Before we let you go, I have a personal question. And let me just say, we're going to put both of Andy's articles, really, they're powerful. They are to be shared. The response to this weekend's terror attacks showed willful blindness in real time and the mulish stupidity of Clinton-Obama counterterrorism. But Andy, you are such a prolific writer and you have so much knowledge about this because you studied the Quran and all the Islamic teachings when you were prosecuting the blind sheikh, who is himself a very bright, he has a doctorate in Islam. He's an Islamic scholar. And so you made yourself one, an American scholar. But when you go, I see you mostly on Fox. I don't even know if you're ever invited to be on other networks. Are you able to speak as plainly on Fox as you do with me? And secondly, are you ever invited on other outlets so that you can make this case?
I don't get a lot of invitations, Andy, but I get some. But I have to say I've been treated very well by the people at Fox when they've had me on. and I have never once had a time when they said to me, you know, let's not go there or let's not say this. Even when they disagreed with me, you know, even when there were people who were brought on the set, actually, to, you know, disagree with me and debate a topic. So, you know, I've occasionally been on CNN. They haven't asked in a while. I don't really worry about it. I just kind of do what I do. And, you know, you have to be modest and humble if you're realistic about the impact that one person can have. But at the same time, you do have to put your head down and do what you can do and hope that if you're doing it, you know, with energy and persuasiveness, that things will fall into place the way they should fall into place.
I just think truth cannot be, it can be silenced, it could be set aside for a time, but it always comes forth. And Andy, I talk to Americans every day, and I have to tell you that things that you write and say, and that our friends in this movement write and say have made it into the bloodstream of Americans. They understand this better than fools. I'm trying to be, let me be more careful. Than the misguided persons that you and I work with, me in Washington and you in New York City. I think it's getting into the lifeblood, and it's because people like you have been so faithful to repeat it and report it so clearly. Andy, we certainly do appreciate
your time.
That's
so kind of you to say, Sandy. Thank you so much. Yeah,
I mean it. All right, Andy, thank you so much. Andy McCarthy, again, we'll put his articles on our Facebook page so that you can access and share them. Andy, thanks a lot, and have a great day, and please stay safe.
You too, Sandy. Thank you.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, Sandy Rios, back in a second on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there is so much uncertainty about what to do and how to do it when it comes to this incredible responsibility to be a good steward of what God's entrusted us with. Whether it's a lot or a little, it's irrelevant. But it's a very scary prospect today in this day of volatility.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia every weekday morning from 8 until 10 Central and Saturday from 10 to 11 on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We now know that two foreign nationals who received refuge in this country, one from Somalia, the other from Afghanistan, are implicated in the jihadist attacks that took place over the weekend in Minnesota, New York, and New Jersey. One might be forgiven for thinking that these timely reminders of the dangers associated with reckless refugee resettlement and immigration policies would induce President Obama to refrain from exacerbating our resulting parlous position. That would, of course, require him to put national security and public safety ahead of his ideologically driven desire for a legacy that fundamentally transforms America. So, as they say in New York, forget about it. We need a national course correction. If Congress foolishly funds the president's proposal to import potentially hundreds of thousands more jihadists, Americans will have to seize upon the opportunity to reject it at the polls in November. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
At last night's Emmy Awards, the Hollywood elite ripped Trump up one side and down the other.
He's a complete dangerous monster, and any moment that I have to call Trump out for being an inheritor to Hitler, I will.
Things we think of pale in comparison to that madman threatening Hillary Clinton, not once, but twice.
Who is to blame for Donald Trump? That guy. Mark Burnett.
So that was the Emmys this week. You can see we talked with Andy McCarthy just a second ago about how how the terrorism incidents over the weekend are affecting people in New York, and that would be certainly bleed over to people in Hollywood, people in the arts. And you can hear, this is how it's affecting them. It's just it's amazing. So that ties into the story that I told you earlier about all of these immigrants from dangerous countries being granted citizenship. And I want you to hear James Rosen's report on this because he goes into more detail. Let's listen.
A new report by the Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security finds the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or CIS, improperly granted citizenship to 1,029 foreigners from countries of concern or with high rates of immigration fraud, individuals who had already had a final deportation order issued against them under another identity. In 858 of these cases, fingerprints for the individual, either at DHS or the FBI, were not available because the agencies haven't fully digitized their inventories of older fingerprints taken on paper.
This is a case where we had the data, but the desire to grant citizenship trumped the core competency to make the data available in a timely way.
But it gets worse. The DHS Inspector General finds one of these newly naturalized citizens using a false identity has become a law enforcement official here. Three of them have obtained some form of security clearance. Two enjoy access to secure areas at commercial airports, and one has access to secure areas at maritime facilities. In a statement, DHS spokesperson Nima Hakim said before the report was issued, ICE, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, had already digitized the majority of the 315,000 records, which it had previously identified as having potentially missing paper fingerprint records. Due to a lack of funding, that effort did not complete the digitization process. The remaining number will now be reviewed and digitized. Addressing the weekend bombings in New York and New Jersey, in which the lead suspect is an Afghan native who attained naturalized citizenship here in the U.S., Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton warned against painting with too broad a brush.
There are millions and millions of naturalized citizens in America from all over the world.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, who has called for much tougher immigration measures, renewed that call after the weekend explosions.
So let me state very, very clearly, immigration security is national security.
Well, that was a report again from James Rosen, and I wanted you to hear that because he said it, he made it so clear, and then he put it in context. So we have an out of control process of people coming into this country, not just allowed to come across the borders, come without vetting, overstaying their visas, but now we're granting them citizenship by mistake, so says Department of Homeland Security spokesperson Nima Hakim. Yeah, so I'm not sure what's going on there. Can't even imagine, can you? What's going on there? But this is another facet of it, and that is that the leadership in the House of Representatives, the Republican leadership, is so wretched on this issue. Did you not hear Paul Ryan criticizing Donald Trump over his just merely saying we should stop and vet Muslims coming in, we should call a moratorium for a time so we can see who's coming in, and, oh, it's outrageous, how dare, it's Islamophobic, how dare, we would never do that. And so they're not just saying it, they're actually planning on funding it. They are planning right now, even as we speak, a continuing resolution which will fund all of the illegal, legal, all of the stuff that the president is expediting, the Department of Homeland Security is expediting, funding all of it and increasing it in a short-term CR. And that's why some congressmen, not many of them, but some of them who are valiant, are taking this on. One of them is Jim Bridenstine from Oklahoma. And Jim actually did an audio message. It's a little video that he created. And we're going to listen to the audio of it because I want you to hear it, because this is something we could actually do in response to this chaos. Here's Congressman Jim Bridenstine.
Try to imagine everything our government is responsible for. Try to visualize as many departments and agencies and layers of bureaucracy as you can. It is staggering. It is nearly incomprehensible. And it's growing, feeding on your tax dollars and adding to the $20 trillion of debt. So who is responsible for this recklessness? When it comes to funding our government, the responsibility starts with the U.S. House of Representatives. Each year, members of Congress are to discuss, debate, and produce a budget that reflects the voice of their constituents. This is accomplished by taking all of the functions of our government and dividing them up into 12 distinct areas. These 12 areas are funded with 12 appropriation bills that are considered one at a time in what we call regular order so that they can be discussed, amended, and voted on. Ideas are exchanged, people are represented, the executive branch can be held in check, and the government is funded. Now imagine sidestepping this entire process, silencing the voices of the people, and eliminating any opportunity for a course correction. Imagine our $20 trillion debt growing, unchecked, and our nation barreling towards a fiscal train wreck without anything being done to stop it. Well, that is exactly what Congress is doing. Under a process called a continuing resolution, Congress rolls all 12 spending bills into one massive spending bill. And every member of Congress gets only an up or a down vote, funding all of the government or none of the government. There's no representation, no change, and no leadership. This guarantees funding for programs like Planned Parenthood, the Syrian Refugee Resettlement Program, Sanctuary Cities, damaging EPA regulations, and Obamacare. And it guarantees that our national debt continues to grow unchecked. When does it stop? It stops when Congress says no. We must not fund the president's liberal agenda. We must not allow our debt to grow unchecked, and we must finally balance the budget. That is why I will be voting no on the continuing resolution.
Right, that piece is, again, that was the Congressman Jim Bridenstine from Oklahoma. Now, many of you have written me because of the shows lately and the intensity with which we feel the dangers that are just everywhere and that we're on a precipice. And people have asked, what can we do? Tell us, what can we do? Well, this is something. This is one thing that you can do, and that is call your congressperson. Whoever it is, call your congressperson today and tell them to vote no on the CR. We're going to put this video on our Facebook page so that you can access it and watch it. It explains it. I would recommend you listen and just let it settle in. It will help you understand. You shouldn't have to do this. Could I just say that the person that you elected to represent you should be responsible, shouldn't have to be cajoled to stop us from going headlong, head first, into terrible, terrible debt, funding things that will eventually undermine and destroy, already are undermining and destroying this country. We shouldn't have to make ourselves expert on the continuing resolution, but we do because we have managed to elect some of the worst people. I swear, I don't care if they're Republican or Democratic, we have been asleep at the wheel. We have elected people who have selfish desires, ambitious aims, and they have nothing to do with the preservation and welfare of the country. And I put Paul Ryan in that category. I put all of the leadership in the Senate and also in the House in that category. They have failed. They have failed. And now they're getting ready to fully fund everything because they wouldn't want to, you know what they're afraid of. Remember, it's like shutting down the government. Now, keep in mind that over the issue of the funding the Zika virus, the Democrats were fully prepared to shut down the government because they want to fully fund the death patrol of Planned Parenthood. And so they went to war over that. And the Republicans backed down. Oh, we just can't have trouble. We can't actually have to fight over anything. Well, you're going to have to give them some backbone because they don't have any. So we're going to put that that little clip on our Facebook page. I please suggest that you watch it, you pass it on, you call your congressman and say, no, vote no on the CR. And if you don't vote no on the CR, I'm going to remember next time that you contributed to the downfall and the overwhelming debt of this nation. We won't forget that. We will not forget. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.